Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Mike Peretz. I have with me Cray Bolger and Jacob Avila. Guys, thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Today we're talking about a big article. This is the Reason Trial. It is also known as its full title, the Emergency Department Point of Care Ultrasound in Out of Hospital and in ED Cardiac Arrest. Now this article's been getting a lot of press. It's been bouncing around the internet like a beach ball at a Nickelback concert. So I'm sure you've heard of it. We just wanted to throw in our two cents. So, Cray, why don't you give us a little introduction to it?
So, this article was published in Resuscitation in September 2016 by Gaspari et al. And what this article was looking at is, we know bedside ultrasound has kind of made its mark in the emergency department, but this was really evaluating its role in cardiac arrest. There are lots of practitioners using it in cardiac arrest to determine if there's cardiac activity, there's any reversible causes, and there's no clear guidelines as to how we should be using bedside ultrasound and cardiac arrest, which is what this article aimed to look at. And does it change outcomes and survivability, and does it help us predict who's going to make it out of the hospital and who's going to survive their arrest? And so the big question of this article was, is there sonographic activity associated with survival in cardiac arrest?
Right, so it's really a prognostic indicator that they're looking at. If there is cardiac activity in this dead patient, does it mean anything for what's going to happen down the road, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, Jacob, can you take us through how they actually performed this study?
So, what this research study was is pretty impressive. They actually took 20 hospitals from across the United States and Canada. They included patients who had out-of-hospital cardiac or in ED cardiac arrest with either PEA or asystole. So those are the ones that were included. And they did an ultrasound at the beginning and at the end of ACLS. The primary outcome they were looking at was survival to hospital admission with some secondary outcomes, including survival to hospital discharge and ROSC. Now, as far as the scan itself, the probe that they used, they didn't really specify, but it was probably either the phased array or the curvilinear probe. They did state that they used a sub-xiphoid or their paraschoenal long axis view of the heart. And for them, cardiac motion was defined as any visible movement of the myocardium, excluding movement of the blood within the cardiac chambers or isolated valve movement.
Yes. So I think basically, like you said, Jacob, all these patients that came in, they had to be in arrest. They had to, when they entered the trial, be in either asystole or PEA arrest. And then they got an ultrasound right when they started the resuscitation. They had to at least go through one round of medications before being actually enrolled. And then they were part of the trial. Let's see what we got. Looking at the results, they ended up having 793 patients over 3.5 years that they were able to analyze, so after all their exclusions. And just to get a feel for what these patients were like, about 116 of them actually had VFib or VTAC as their initial rhythm, but they got included because they eventually became PEA or asystole. About 208 patients, which is 26%, survived the initial resuscitation, so they got return of spontaneous circulation. 14.4% survived to admission, and 13% survived to discharge. So when you looked at those that had cardiac activity, about 51% got return of spontaneous circulation, and 28.9% survived to admission, and 3.8% survived to discharge. So I know that we're going to keep going through these numbers because they really were looking at three endpoints: getting the pulse back, getting admitted, and surviving to discharge from the hospital. And those are all three different things. Obviously, what the patient cares about most and what the patient's family cares about is actually getting out of the hospital. Who cares if they, you know, survive to be in the ICU for 40 days on a vent and then die? So let's look at their primary outcome. Remember, their primary outcome was survival to hospital admission. Cardiac activity on ultrasound did did strongly associate with survival to hospital admission. The odds ratio was 3.6, and this was the strongest relationship to survival at all the endpoints they checked compared to the other variables that might affect it. Now, just looking at it another way, if you look at the test characteristics for ultrasound detecting the people that wouldn't survive, which they have summarized in a nice table in the article, you can see that ultrasound in asystole was 90% sensitive for survival to discharge and about 0% specific, which is pretty bad. PEA was 47% sensitive and 91% specific. So I think although you can see it is associated with survival if they do have cardiac activity, or I guess more accurately you should say if they don't have activity, it's associated with not survival. But are these sensitivities and specificities high enough that you'd really want to hang your hat on it?
I think that's one of the, I mean, that's why they did the study, right? I mean, there are a bunch of other studies that had kind of looked at this in single centers and it asked the question, you know, if I use my ultrasound, will I be able to accurately prognosticate where the patient would end up, you know, in the morgue or in the hospital? And this study is a pretty good study, right? I mean, it's like 20 hospitals in two countries. And the results, honestly, like when I saw these results, I was a little bit excited, but I was also a little bit disappointed because I wanted the ultrasound to be 100% accurate, you know?
I think that's what we were all hoping for. No cardiac activity, nobody survives at all.
Exactly, exactly. And that was unfortunately, well, I guess fortunately for the patient, unfortunately for us that love ultrasound, a little disappointing. But I mean, it's an important thing to know. And one of the things I always talk to my residents about is that you can't use that ultrasound in isolation. You have to use everything else at your disposal to try and figure out what's the best thing for your patient, you know?
I agree. I think another point though is maybe when you see activity rather than the absence of activity, it may push you to do a little bit more, which I think is where I would use it, because I think the absence of activity is helpful in correlation with how many rounds have I gotten into, what was their etiology of the arrest. And I think that's, you know, maybe another study is using it to guide your management of the H's and T's, which I know has been looked at. But also the part I have a question about is those rhythms where you're not quite sure, you know, there's a crappy baseline. I think that's where I find ultrasound helpful too, is if I see what looks like fibrillation, it's not just am I going to call the code or not, but which pathway am I going down, electricity or no electricity? And I'd really like to see the same study repeated with all rhythms included.
Agreed. Another thing that I would like to see kind of along those lines is the rhythm and the cardiac activity versus no cardiac activity. That was all up to every institution's particular ED provider that was doing the ultrasound, right? It'd be nice to get maybe three expert interpreters to look at the ultrasound, you know, later, like on a review with an EKG to see if they agreed with it being asystole or not.
Yep. A nice Kappa test for this.
Yeah, they did do a Kappa for the ultrasound only, where they had one of the experts review all of the ultrasounds and see if they agreed that there was no cardiac activity. So at least they did do that.
Yeah, but it would have been nice with the rhythm strip to just kind of correlate it with that.
Definitely. So let me talk about a few of the secondary outcomes, because that was the main one. They also looked at, based on the rhythms, specifically whether it was asystole or PEA, how much that mattered. And they saw the main finding there was that if you're in asystole and you have no cardiac activity on ultrasound, you do have a pretty poor prognosis there. The sensitivity for non-survival was 91% as far as survival to return to spontaneous circulation.
Sure.
Also, they did have some other interesting findings that I liked where they used ultrasound and it was able to alter their management. So you can imagine some of the things that would cause someone to arrest might be discernible on ultrasound. So they specifically cited pericardial effusions, which were presumed to be tamponade in the case of arrest. And those patients that underwent pericardiocentesis actually had a higher survival rate compared to the rest of the gang, which makes sense. Another theoretical place you could do it is if you see signs of right heart strain and you suspect a pulmonary embolism, you may want to do thrombolytics in this patient.
Agreed. So, yeah, so definitely useful in arrest for, you know, the whole classic H's and T's thing. And I don't know how you can really diagnose pericardial effusion with just your physical exam, especially in a rested patient. So definitely another advantage. And I'm glad that they showed this here. It would have been nice to have a bigger number, but I guess, you know, I don't see a whole lot of arresting patients that have tamponade. I've seen a couple, but not a lot. And I guess this 13% is probably what is out there as far as cardiac arrest presentations.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the limitations to this study. A few things off the bat. I think the one that is a little bit disappointing to some people is that when they did all these endpoints of survival, they didn't check any sort of neurologic assessment or score. So we don't know that these patients that survived actually had very good functional outcomes. So that clouds the picture a little bit.
Yeah, because, I mean, survival is one thing, but what if it's survival, but you're vented and trached and don't really do anything, you know?
Right.
And the percentages overall for general ROSC are fairly low for survival, neurologically intact, out of hospital, baseline function. I mean, that's a fairly small percentage of our ROSCs.
Right.
I think the authors brought up a couple other limitations that all of the providers in the study were not blinded to the ultrasound results, so they could have influenced their management prior to enrollment. So for example, if the patient came in and they got an ultrasound and they showed no cardiac activity, they may have ended the resuscitation and called the code prior to getting one round of medications and therefore would never have been enrolled in that case.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Overall though, I think that this was a really awesome study. Obviously, this is a huge effort, and we really applaud all the authors for doing it. So let me bring home the points that I think we can take home from this. Cardiac activity on the initial ultrasound in the arrest, in these PEA or asystole arrests, is associated with increased survival in hospital admission. They had an odds ratio of 3.6, but keep in mind it's not very specific or sensitive, so you can't always hang your hat on it. Secondly, patients that had no cardiac activity and were in an initial rhythm asystole do have a very low chance of meeting any of those survival endpoints. I'm not going to say no chance, but it's pretty poor sign. And lastly, ultrasound can identify causes of your arrest, leading to interventions that can decrease their overall mortality. All right. Now, I think, Cray, you had another thought?
Yeah, another key point here is that the average time to acquisition for these ultrasounds is about 4 to 5 seconds. Which I think is really important because a lot of the naysayers of ultrasound and cardiac arrest have argued that it increases time off the chest. And I'd like to point out that this is about half the time that the AHA recommends time off the chest. So I think when done right, it can actually be a huge benefit to hands-on CPR.
I definitely agree. Yeah, just a quick look, wipe off the chest, keep going. And you can even review your ultrasound images after you take them and while they're continuing the resuscitation and chest compressions. Also, I will bring up though, if you do have a TEE probe, you don't even need to stop.
That's true.
Good point.
All right, more on that later. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you later.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel,
more pressure, more gel.